Hello, and thank you for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann, and I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, vamos Padres. Yeah. I hope I did that right, Nick.
Hey, you know, we're global. We're global. Yes. We're bringing this party all over the world. The Padres just got back from Mexico City, and now we're doing piñata parties. Every game, it seems.
Yeah, so I don't want to go as far as to say that like Mexico fixed the Padres, but Mexico got the Padres going in a really fun direction that all of a sudden they now have like a personality coming out of Mexico.
Yeah.
It's fun all of a sudden. I don't know why, what that was, that 16-run game and the atmosphere of what is that? The altitude of 8.
Yeah, it's one of the highest. I think it's the highest game ever played. Or yeah, it was an incredible thing to watch. I mean, the pitches were breaking faster. You know, it's just playing baseball at that elevation is just insane. But I mean, it's been a fun kind of. I feel like we're kind of it's changing. We're 17 and 15. Soto's showing life of becoming the Juan Soto that was advertised, and that's exciting. Tatis is playing pretty good right field. You know, he's becoming more comfortable every day, and it's exciting to me because, you know, right field is an important position to our fan base, and the fact that he could be the next great right fielder behind Tony Gwynn, it would be really something special, I think, for our middle age.
Yes. So far, what I've seen of him out there, I was a little skeptical at first, but man, he covers ground like few I've ever seen. And then he had a throw the other night. I still think he looks, I don't know why his physique, maybe he's just so lanky or whatever, but man, his throw to third the other night, I don't forget who he threw out, but yeah. It was on a rope. It was like Manny was feet off the bag and was able to tag him out. So yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to see him develop in that position. And like you said, the Tony Gwynn legacy there could be something very special. It could be another 10, 15 year thing there. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. I remember growing up in San Diego and, you know, not being a great athlete and being told, you know, being placed in right field on the little league field. And, you know, as a response as being a chubby little leaguer was that, well, Tony Gwynn plays right field. So it is cool to play right field. And, you know, the other day, my son got put in right field and a kid cheered him up and said, well, Tatis plays in right field. So I think that's I almost broke down crying on the field, you know, I mean, because it's like, you know,
because now you have to be lengthy.
Yeah, or yeah. You could be like an NBA two-guard who has a rifle for an arm, you know. It's but you know, I think the Padres are going to be okay. The pitching is still questionable and it's, you know, I think that's going to be the story of the season, how the pitching holds up and what they do to improve it throughout the season. I've been told that Manny Machado hasn't had a great start, but I'm not ready to comment on that yet. I'd like I don't believe it. I don't believe what the media is telling us on that. So,
it's curious. I don't know how to feel about it. I mean, I'm not upset with him or anything like that, but it is a slowish start. He feels very comfortable now. And I think that's good, but I also don't, this might be way too early to even bring up and slap me and say, stop it, Travis. But is there a point in life where you get comfortable? Like it's done for him, right?
Yeah,
like
you're a professional.
He does not have to think about anything for 15 years. Like it's done.
I don't know. I'm not ready to go there. I mean, I think it is a shift in his life. You know, his professional career is pretty, you know, the number one earning thing that he does has been basically secured. So I guess that does change, but I think he's woken up every day trying to be the best baseball player he can be. And I don't think that changes.
I have no doubts.
I don't know. Yeah, I think
his defense
is
still
season.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And the bat comes around. He's one of those guys that I think he's the opposite of me. I wish I was like him more and more, but I honestly don't think he gets affected when he strikes out or anything like that. He knows his process and he trusts that process. And if he's not hitting, it's just a fluke right now and just keep with that process. And I know it'll come around. It always does. So Don't listen to the media, Nick. They don't know.
Yeah, I know. Well, we'll check back in. You know, we want to just get a little Padres talk going to start here. But we have a very special episode tonight. We're going to be talking to another podcast, a podcast for the Oakland A's. They're called the Town Tailgate Podcast with Chris and Julio. They were on our podcast last year when we stole Bob Melvin away from them, and they came on to talk to us about it. They're really smart, cool guys, and what's happening in Oakland is, you know, was alarming to me and Travis, you know, after going through what the Chargers did. So we wanted to have a conversation with them and talk about it, just to see what the fan base up there is going through and offer them a lifeline. They can always, any Oakland A's fan can join us. We see you, we love you, we welcome you, we take you on, no problem. You can be a part of this party anytime. But here's our conversation.
It's pretty easy because all you have to do is shift the green to brown, the gold stays the same. Like, it's a really easy transition.
Well, yeah. So yeah, we'll bond over Ricky Henderson. You know,
yes,
Padres and A's, great Ricky Henderson. But yeah, this is our conversation with the Town Tailgate Podcast. Keep the faith. Okay, we're back with the Town Tailgate Podcast with Chris and Julio. What's up, guys?
What's up, man? I mean, I said it when I came on the Zoom. It's just like every time we talk to you guys, it's bad news for us and good news for you. I don't know if this is as much good news, but, you know, I guess it's some because your fan base might be growing a little bit.
Yeah. No, it's we wanted to have you on. I mean, just the news and the potential move to Las Vegas for the Oakland A's. Yeah, it's a bummer for, I think all baseball fans shouldn't like this. This is awful. I grew up, you know, learning the game, kind of being just awakened to it by following the Oakland A's of the late 80s and early 90s. And I just can't imagine a team not being in Oakland.
It seems like, I think the biggest thing that's come out of the news over the last couple of weeks, and Chris and I, we talked about it on the podcast as well as in person, is just the over estimation of how much support this franchise was getting for staying in Oakland, where like people we would never have expected to come out and give support, be like, no, this isn't an Oakland problem. This is a John Fisher, the team owner problem. Especially Ken Rosenthal wrote like a really great piece about it a couple weeks ago. And he's pretty much calling out Rob Manfred in it with it. And that's the one thing we can kind of agree with. It's the mad dogs of the world. Of course, they're going to be like, Oakland stinks and all that. But like that, nobody takes them serious anymore. It's like the more respected journalists.
People like Mad Dog who are like ignorant.
Yeah.
Like don't know. They literally, they see it on the rundown, talk about the A's. Yeah. And he's just like, all right, I'm just going to wing it real quick and see what happens. It's not like the educated people like the Ken Rosenthal's or you go ahead, Julio. I do want to bring up Damon's name because he's been covering it amazingly.
Yes, he's from CBS Sports. He's came out with it.
Damon Amendola. He does the early morning show for CBS Sports Radio, like the national show. He was the first national voice who was really regularly talking about it and calling out ownership for it. Like Ken Rosenthal, he did jump in, but he jumped in after the news was already kind of set and after everything happened. So it's like, I do give Ken Rosenthal credit. He's probably the biggest name in baseball journalism. So like when he talks about it, it does mean something and it finally hits like a wider audience, but he doesn't do that for, I mean, Damon Amendola has been talking about it for like the past year on his show, but it hasn't gotten much like traction on the internet till recently because of
the announcement.
Like, yeah. Because I mean, A's fans like us, we've been seeing clips of his for a year and we've just been like, that's what I'm fucking talking about. Yes. Keep talking about it. And he's still talking about it. And he brings on like specialists like Casey Pratt, who's been covering this so closely since the beginning and really like breaking down all the legal aspects, the infrastructure aspects of it. So that like common people like us who don't know, you know, the ins and outs of it, who can't understand the language, like understand it. He's just like this amazing Bay Area journalist. He brought him on there so that he can get like a national voice and like it's just been, you know, but then you have the Mad Dogs and the Stephen A. Smiths who come on and they're just like, I agree, the city of Oakland has never been a good baseball city and blah blah blah. And it's just like, dude, go fuck yourself, you know? Like, yeah, like, you, like, if you're gonna have this platform, like, at least use it for, like, be informed, you know, if you're gonna do that.
Yeah, we had a lot of national media when the Chargers were leaving.
Yeah,
talk a bunch of shit about San Diego, and then those same, I remember a few people when the Padres had that run last season, thanks to Bob Melvin, to go into the playoffs. A lot of them were saying like, "Oh man, San Diego is this vibrant sports city. The Chargers should come back," you know. And it's like, "Oh yeah, you were talking shit before that." So I don't know. I mean.
Well, and that vibrancy was always there. That's what's so weird.
I know it's there for Oakland too.
And it's there. So it's like the team has to be something worth watching, or even, and if it's not, like, it's not the fans' fault. And the fans always get the most heat in these kind of situations, unjustifiedly so, in my opinion. But,
and your guys' fan base, it's actually been great because you guys have been on, like, really showcasing it the past 6 months. One with the Padres run, but also the fucking San Diego State's run to the national championship. Like, my brother lives in San Diego now, and he said when they won that final four game, I mean, their whole entire run, like, all the bars were packed. He would go out because his girlfriend goes to San Diego State, so she, like, has a lot of Aztec pride. So they would go out to the bars and watch the game, and from, like, start of the tournament all the way to final four, the place was packed. And when they won, when they hit that game winning shot in the final four to make the national championship, he said the town went insane. Like, everybody in the bar lost it. They left, and, like, they were, like, celebrating in the streets. Like, they had literally just won the championship. Like, they were shut.
There was a local earthquake. You could feel it, like, in the ground. Yes.
And, like, and it just, like, showcased, like, this town does care about its teams, but it, you know, in a certain lovable way that, if from the outside looking in, you wouldn't understand it.
Yeah. And so the guy at the center of the story is John Fisher, and what is his story, and does this all surround him? He owns the team, and they make several attempts to get something done in Oakland. I don't know. Take us through that. Is that, how long ago did he buy the team, and is this all started with his ownership?
So he bought the team with Lou Wolf, a more of a minor stake, but Lou Wolf had the majority stake, and second was John Fisher. And this was back in 2006. Julio, does that sound right? Or was it
2005, 2000? Yeah, mid 2000s, more or less.
Mid 2000s. And Lou Wolf's whole thing was he wanted to get a stadium built somewhere in the Bay Area. And he first made the attempt in Fremont. Lou Wolf is a billionaire real estate mogul, and he has a lot of commercial real estate, mostly in the Bay Area. And he's made a lot of his money off of commercial real estate in San Francisco and in San Jose, but his headquarters are kind of in San Jose. So he wanted somewhere in the South Bay Area. So he first, a plot of land that he had in Fremont, that deal was pretty much done. They shovels were going into the ground, and the day before the shovels were going in the ground, the city of Fremont completely just debunked the entire situation for some reason. I think it was some public funding that they didn't have the money for anymore. Like, so they were supposed to come up with it, they didn't have it, and then they just completely just threw it in the trash. And so he's like, okay, you know, that is what it is. So next couple of years, he works on another deal. He has another big plot of land in San Jose, right across the street from the SAP Center, which is where the San Jose Sharks play their games. And that deal was done with the city. Everything was fine. All the money was going to be privately funded. The city of San Jose wasn't going to have to pay any money because he wanted to avoid that whole situation again. But back in the 90s, the A's owner, Walter Haas, in order to keep the San Francisco Giants from moving to Tampa Bay, because a lot of people don't remember this, San Francisco Giants were this close to moving to Tampa Bay in 1995. In order to keep them there, because he felt that the Giants were such a big part of that market, he gave the territorial rights of San Jose and South Bay to the Giants. So the Giants own those rights. So Lou Wolf wanted those rights back in order to build his stadium, and the Giants refused to do it because the Giants, pretty much ownership, basically since the start, has done everything they can to keep the drive the A's out because they want to dominate, have that entire market to themselves.
And they were trying to get out of Candlestick and get AT&T built, right? That was kind of their play. Yes. While that's happening. Okay, good.
But they couldn't get a stadium built in San Francisco, so they were trying to go to Tampa Bay. And then the A's owner, Walter Haas, gave them the territorial rights in San Jose to give them basically a negotiating tactic with San Francisco, where it's like, we're going to stay in the Bay, but we're not going to be up in San Francisco. So like, blah, blah, blah. There's a long history of that I don't have all the knowledge to, but it's crazy. So Lou Wolf can't get his stadium built. He gets upset. So in 2013, he just kind of fed up and he sells all of his shares to John Fisher. John Fisher, also, by the way, for your listeners, he is a trust fund baby. He is the son.
That's what I thought. He had the look. I know.
He is the child of the founders and billionaires who created the Gap. Clothing.
He's the Kendall Roy of the situation.
Gotcha. Yes. The Dean Spanos. Maybe.
Exactly.
That's exactly what it is. So he has never worked a day in his life. He doesn't quite understand that. He has lived in this bubble probably and doesn't get it. So he took over that team. He tried to get a stadium built in Oakland. After numerous times of failing, just, you know, I think he got pressure from Rob Manfred and the commissioner's office to pursue another deal to put pressure on the city of Oakland. But by that time it was just a little bit too late. And just to wrap it up, I'm sure Julio wants to fill in a few blanks, something like that. Just to wrap it up. They did present a very generous, the A's did present a very generous and very reasonable proposal for the Howard Terminal site stadium that the city of Oakland voted down. And they instead want to present their own proposal that they wanted the A's to approve. And that's kind of where all of the catfighting, let's call it that, started happening between the city and the team. Because the A's were like, what the fuck? We thought we had this deal. We've been working with you guys for a year, back and forth, ironing out this deal that we thought was foolproof. Like, we've been working with you guys on language and stuff like that in this deal. And then they were just like, no, sorry. And then they were like, if you want to do it, you got to do it with our deal. And it's just very high school.
But wait, there's more.
Yeah.
So when, because there's always some of these situations. So when Lou Wolf and John Fisher bought the team back in 2005, one of the people who actually put in the highest bids, who was very close to purchasing the team, was none other than Joe Lacob. He is the majority owner of the Golden State Warriors, you know, the team that's won 4 championships in the last 8 years and built a brand new arena in San Francisco. He wanted to buy the A's. But then Commissioner Bud Selig, if you just need like more stuff to kind of put you more on his shit list, or for him to always be internally on your shit list, right? He was frat brothers with Lou Wolf. So of course, through this, you know, mutual connection and all this, he wanted to sell this team to his buddy instead of going to the person who could have potentially been the highest bidder. The rest is history. When it comes to the whole Vegas situation, so we actually had jumped. If you guys want to listen to like an initial reaction podcast, one of our good pals, his name is Alex Espinoza. His podcast he runs, it's him and Hal the Hot Dog Economist. He used to be a hot dog vendor at the A's game when he was getting his master's from UC Berkeley. And you'd always hear him in the crowd just yelling, "Give me an A," but and all that. They do a joint podcast called the Ricky Henderson of Blogs. And the night the announcement went out, they did a Twitter Spaces where they just got a ton of live reactions from fans, where everybody's talking through it and all these things. And straight up, the initial reaction was like, it's done. Like, it's doomed. But then over the couple of days afterwards, things started kind of lining up with it. One was like, one, why did they announce this on a Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Pacific? To, you know, majority of the East Coast people are asleep at that point. It was very calculated because the following day was Warriors, Kings. And of course, all of Northern California was going to be talking about it, right? The other thing too is John Fisher and his co. Also, we can't forget to mention the lovely Dave Cavill, who is just turned into a gigantic snake in this whole situation. He was the person who helped coin the rooted in Oakland term. In 2018, when the team was celebrating their 50th anniversary in Oakland, they had their a free game in April where no price for tickets, you come in, and it was like a massive success. So they're doing all these great marketing things. And then really he was just being a used car salesman on the back end of things. He was kind of talking with other cities. So the biggest thing that's happening right now is the city of Las Vegas and the Oakland A's are about $500 million apart in public money, and that the A's want the team to cover, or the city to cover, that $500 million. Granted, the land hasn't been purchased. There's no renderings. There's a lot of legislation that's going to needs to happen still. There actually was an article that came out this morning that's from a lot of Vegas folks who are like, if this thing was actually going to happen, we would have found out last week. Mm-hmm. This, like, it should have been pushed through last week. Uh-huh. So, but the reality is, in Oakland, a lot of these pre-measures that needed to get done were all signed off. When it came to the environmental use being passed from the Port of Oakland with Howard Terminal to the team, that was passed on to the team.
Let me just explain what that is to the listeners, your listeners, really quick. I don't know. We're going and going and going. Trust me, we're almost done.
No, this is great. Yeah.
For years, our podcast was all about city regulations and props, and we got deep into it. So
we started a side show so people knew it was going to be Stadium Talk, called Stadium Talk That Rocks.
Yeah.
So anyway, sorry, my Zoom kind of freaked out there a little bit. So the environmental report or whatever, that's important because the stadium is over water. So that report, from my basic understanding, is to show that this stadium is going to be better for the environment and the bay and everything like that, more than what the current use for it is, basically. Sorry.
Okay. And so I'm listening to your last podcast, I think it was your last podcast, where you guys were talking about how John Fisher isn't exactly impressing people, important people in Las Vegas, the powers that need to be impressed. His act isn't playing very well. How much do you think that could play into it? Is that, you know?
I'm sure that he's talking to some people that are important in Vegas, and he's trying to line up the right things. But the people that he's pissing off in Vegas do have a lot of pull and a lot of influence in that city. One of them is Mark Davis, the owner of the Oakland or the Las Vegas Raiders. Mark Davis has totally adopted that town and completely, like, made it his town. He knows everybody who he needs to know in that town. In order to get his stadium built and to get his team moved there, he kind of had to do that. So he's been schmoozing those people for some time now. The Raiders are now, since they are there, are a fixture in that city. Mm-hmm. And if John Fisher wants to get his stadium built there, he's going to have to be on Mark Davis's good side. But he already fucked over Mark Davis in the past. He is the reason why Mark Davis had to go to Las Vegas to move there, because he chose. So basically, when the Raiders and the A's back in, like, around 2015 time were looking for a new stadium in the city of Oakland, you know, Oakland kind of, like, put a lot of shade on the Raiders, and, like, kind of, like, we're talking about how they were, you know, shopping around different ideas, and how Mark Davis wasn't committing to the city. And Mark Davis was like, no, that's not true. We're trying to commit to the city, but basically what the A's signed a 10-year lease around that time for the Coliseum, basically giving the Raiders no other option to build another stadium, because a football stadium is a lot bigger than a baseball
stadium. Right, right, right.
You need more space. And the Raiders wanted to build a stadium on that Coliseum land. When they signed that lease with the city, they gave the Raiders pretty much nowhere else to go. And they were like, well, we can't sit this out for 10 more years. Like, I need a new artificial stadium, especially in modern day sports. Every team in the NFL right now has one. So you took this lease, you put up the middle finger, told us to go fuck ourselves and go figure it out on our own. So, like, this is what we have to do. So Mark Davis, the way he sees it is that he was pushed out of Oakland by the A's.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, MLB is, it sounds like MLB is waiting for this deal, the A situation and the Rays situation, to get solved so they can really focus on expansion. I mean, is it something maybe where if Las Vegas doesn't want the A's or doesn't get along with the A's ownership, that they could just be at the top of the line for that. If that comes, you know, between them and Nashville, and I guess Charlotte's in the mix. I don't know how that would play out, but it seems
the other
like
thing
that would be it.
The other thing that's happened too was once that article was pushed out, the new mayor of Oakland, Chang Chao, she pretty much came out and said like, we had like been making progress. We had a great meeting last week where we put in a couple of notions that were weren't private stuff, but like it's obvious that these guys are, you know, working behind our backs. They're not working in good faith, and they pretty much ceased any negotiations with the team. I think there's a, because the backlash against this is massive. Like it's much bigger than I think Chris and I anticipated. I think a lot of the fan base really anticipated that it's across the country. People are like kind of pissed about this because it's not only just, hey, you know, it's Oakland A's, like, we have, you know, it's one of the most historic franchises since it's been in the city of Oakland, right? You got the only, there's only other three-peat that ever happened in baseball was the Oakland A's besides the Yankees, right? Mm-hmm. Numerous Hall of Famers have come through there. Some of the best moments in baseball history in the last 50 years have come through Oakland, and you're pretty much slapping that in the face. But then the other factor is like, people are just, I think a lot of it has to deal with the last couple of years with the COVID happening and with and this new recession we're in the middle of or potentially entering, and all these billionaires getting bailed out. People are sick of that shit. So when you see another billionaire who's like, I want $500 million for a city or for my new stadium that I have the money for, allegedly, and I don't want to pay for it, then of course it's going to get backlashed. And another thing too with John Fisher, I'll give you all the time in the day for you to find a single interview with him from anybody, and I guarantee you're not going to find it. He is the most reclusive person I've ever, with that big of a spotlight, I've ever seen before. Like, your guys' owner is actually, I've seen him a lot doing more public facing stuff, and he's coming go out there. The Dodgers ownership group with Magic Johnson, all the Martin Moreno with the Angels. Like, these guys are, well, at least give interviews. I think he's given one interview since he's become the majority of owner. And pretty much he uses Dave Cavill as like his lackey and just his face kind of thing. Because
that's why he hired Dave Cavill, because he wanted someone to be the face of the ownership, but he didn't want to do it himself. Because
I read this little article, and I think it was in SF Gate, where they talked about him. Like, he showed up to an employee's meeting and he did it. There's quotes where he's just saying like, I just did it to show people that I exist. And everybody, the quotes they got, the anonymous quotes they got from everybody was like, that was really strange and off-putting. I don't know why.
Yeah. I didn't know what he looked like until all this stuff started coming up. Yeah. And I saw pictures of him.
I think that people just are sick of this act. Like, I mean, these different cities are going through this, you know, at a time, you know, an economic time like this, and people are just sick of it. And I think they've seen it. They've seen the moves before in the last 20 years. And it's like, I can't help but root for the city of Oakland, you know, getting something.
Yeah, I want to go back to that. Julio, I think it's more the first point you made. I think fans are just more informed nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
So they just are more in tune to this knowledge and it's also more accessible because the internet too is probably a big part, but like they just kind of know what's going on now.
Yeah.
I mean, I, you know, I was 14 when the Expos moved to Washington,
mm-hmm.
and people are saying like a lot of the same things that happened during that move or that led up to it is pretty much the same thing that's happening in Oakland right now.
Yeah,
but the difference is like we got social media. Like Ace Twitter is not the biggest community, but it's loud. There's a lot of people who are there who are, I gotta give like all the shout outs in the world to a lot of these people. Like, of course, like Rick Anderson of Blogs, they've been excellent all the time. Uprooted Podcasts, they've also been great, getting a lot of information with there. Casey Pratt, ABC7 in the Bay Area, he's been plugging information. So like everybody's informed now. So you can't just get away with these little behind the door deals, brush under the rug deals anymore, like you could have back in the day. I think, you know, I'm going to knock on wood as much as I can. I hope you guys don't pick it up with it. I think there's a legit world where this completely falls through and he's actually forced to sell the team, because I think Major League Baseball is going to be like, you can't get a deal done in Vegas. You can't get a deal done in Oakland. You you've shown nothing but ineptitude over the last 8 years. And it's going to get to the point where like, it's going to start affecting other owners. It's going to affect other owners where you're, all you've been doing is you've been collecting money from other franchises. Last year, the A's were the worst team in baseball. They lost over 100 games. It's the first time that's happened since, what is it, Chris? Like 1979, 1980, Ricky Henderson's rookie year, right? He still pocketed $60 million.
Yeah.
Nobody was going to these games. He was paying none of these players.
It was top five in Major League Baseball in revenue.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Matt Chapman just won AL Player of the Month. Matt Olson's probably going to be, and Matt and Sean Murphy are probably going to be all-stars. Bob Melvin's coaching the coolest team in baseball.
Right.
And it's like, we could have had this all. This all should have been here. Marcus Simeon's got a massive contract. That this all should have been here still if we just had somebody who was half competent and half cared.
Yeah.
And that's our reality.
Wow.
So if this does happen and they do leave and they go to Las Vegas, what's the timetable for them leaving? And do they just play it out in Oakland? And
I don't know. Their lease is up. Their lease is up in next year, and they can re-sign it. I don't think that's the smartest move, because I don't think that they. I mean, it's just like the fan base is kind of. If they do that, if it becomes official. Like, there will be no fan base. So, like, there's no reason for them to play games here because no one's going to want them there in Oakland. So, I would assume they just make it work for a couple years while they build the stadium, like, in the minor league stadium, the Las Vegas Aviators, which is the A's minor league affiliate, AAA affiliate.
And that's an outdoor. That's an outdoor stadium all year round.
It is, yeah. Also,
that's what I was wondering how they could do it. I mean.
Yep. Hot as hell.
Lots of misters.
Yeah, that's what it's gonna be. Lots. Oh God, imagine those, just seeing those all over the stadium. So like, I don't know what their option is, but their lease is up soon, and I can imagine also. I mean, not even a. I can imagine the city of Oakland's just like, no, we're good. We're not gonna offer you this lease. Like, I don't even think they want one last payday. I think they're just kind of fed up.
Yeah. And another thing too, because I think, you know, Chris and I have both established for like, if this happens, like, we're done. Like, that's it. We're not going to support this team. And we've been getting a lot of slack from people being like, oh, well, you guys are still Raider fans, right? And there's a couple things. I remember seeing a TikTok about it one time where some guy was like, the Raiders could be playing on Mars and I'm still going to be a Raiders fan. The Raiders are the brand. It's right. They can be the Las Vegas Raiders, the Los Angeles Raiders, the Oakland Raiders. You know, I was born with the Raiders being in LA, like it's a brand. Of course, I wish they were in Oakland. Of course, I miss going to the Coliseum and just seeing the grimiest stuff in my life. Going to Raider games, right? But with the A's, it feels different. It feels different because like my mom told me stories of when they first came to Oakland in 1968. And my dad tells me stories like one of my parents' first dates was going to the A's championship parade in 72 or 73, one of those years. And it's also, it's a resemblance of the city. Oakland is it's very much like Pittsburgh, right? Very blue collar. It's a very diverse range of people. You kind of, when you watch A's games, when it's crowded, you see a little bit of everybody there because that's Oakland. And when you leave that environment, we take it personal because it's like my upbringing was in the East. Chris and I both grew up in the East Bay in Antioch, California. But like we spent so much time in Oakland as kids. Like my grandparents were in Oakland. My mom was born in Oakland. So like it feels a lot more personal this time than it did with the Raiders, because the Raiders have already bounced around. We already knew Al Davis was a nutcase. And it served me slow, so was Mark.
But like the Raiders, you're kind of agreeing with Al's code of living, right? Isn't that part of the thing?
I touched on this in our last podcast that you were talking about, you listened to. It's like the history of the Davis family is built around trying to get a new stadium and never getting it done. Yeah. Like they left Oakland for Los Angeles because there was more promise to build a new stadium here. So they were going to play a couple years in the LA Coliseum, and they're going to get a new stadium built. I think Irvine was one of the options or something like that. They couldn't get it done there, so they come back to Oakland. They're like, okay, we'll renovate the Coliseum, which they ruined it, but whatever, renovated, in air quotes. Renovating the Coliseum, built Mount Davis, and then they were going to play in there for a little bit until they get a new stadium. They just can't get a stadium done. So, like, Mark Davis like, I don't blame Mark Davis because he, like, he did everything he could to stay in Oakland. He's from Oakland. He was raised here. He was born here. Like, he loved the city. He said it in his press conference, like, when they left. And he did everything he could to keep the team here, but he just couldn't get it to work. And, like, he just, for the betterment of that franchise, up the value of that franchise and up the value of the NFL in general as a company, he had to do something. He had to move. He had to get a new stadium. So, like,
and he's,
I can't hold it. Whereas, like, John Fisher's like doing, he's like trying to piss everybody off just to make a quick buck. That's what it feels like.
And with Mark Davis too, another thing is his revenue is the team. He's never, this family has never owned other businesses outside the company, where it could be like Jerry Jones with like the oil industry and then the Mara family with all their shenanigans and all that stuff. Yeah. The money that comes from to the Davis family is from the team. So they're technically like one of the more, you know, at the time we're one of the more poor franchises because
they're like
they didn't have
family.
There we go.
Yeah,
that's fascinating. So how is the, in Oakland, as like the sports fans in Oakland, how have they retained a fandom for like the Warriors?
Oh, absolutely.
Say? Is that pretty much
the Warriors is the Bay Area's team? It doesn't matter. Yeah. I mean, some citizens of Oakland are pissed off because they feel like the identity of that team is
right
Oakland, but I don't know. I've always been, you know, the Warriors are the Bay Area's team. It doesn't matter where they play as long as they're in the Bay Area. Like, they belong to the city of San Francisco just as much as they belong to the city of Oakland. So, like, Oakland, in my opinion, doesn't have a claim. I mean, I'm sure Oakland citizens disagree, but they don't have a claim to that team, in my opinion. It's just as much to them as it is us.
So, if the A's leave and, you know, the Raiders are gone, I mean, what other options are you guys looking at as maybe something that the city could rally around? I mean, we added a women's soccer team that is like selling out the Snapdragon Stadium and
the Wave, right?
And it's great. And you know, that's actually like they're outselling the minor league soccer team that we have, the Loyal. We're trying to get an MLS team. And then, you know, I would love to have a WNBA team. I think you guys mentioned possibly getting a WNBA team because the Oracle is still there, right? So they could do something like that.
It's showing its age. But it's there. They still do concerts and stuff like that over there.
Okay.
I would say it's something. WNBA. WNBA has already expressed interest in wanting to expand and do a Northern California team. Where that will be, I don't know. Chase Center is there. But if you look around the WNBA, most of their professional teams don't play in the NBA arenas. They play elsewhere.
Right.
For whatever reason that is, I'm not sure. Because a lot of these owners are dual owners. Like, the Liberty owner owns the Nets, so like I don't know. Yeah. It's like,
but no, they're playing in Brooklyn though. The Liberty play in Brooklyn. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
That's like one of the only ones.
That's Joe Tsai. He's the owner of the San Diego Seals, our indoor lacrosse team.
Oh, is he?
You guys should get that going. Indoor lacrosse. We have a.
Oh my God! Why? Yeah. Tangent. Sorry, but
we've been nudging him for years.
Yeah, we want to bring the Nets here, dog. Let's go.
You know, it's so funny. My girlfriend's sister, her boyfriend, is like a lacrosse nut.
Lax,
bro. Like upset. Like he coaches like three leagues during the weekend, but like he's a SEAL season ticket holder. And he always, whenever I see him, shout out to David. Whenever I see him, he's always like typing me up, like, you should go to a game. You guys gotta come. It's like, I'll make it there one of these days.
He's like the Steve Ballmer for the Alibaba group. He's like the third guy. he lives in La Jolla. And his son, he fell in love with lacrosse at Yale. And like his son is playing at the biggest, you know, the richest private school in San Diego. He's playing. And so to connect with his son, he bought an indoor lacrosse team. And so it's a blast. I have season tickets. It's fun.
That's
it. So, yeah, it's really fun. It's cool. You guys should come down. It's great.
I got the hookup through David. So we got to find a way. But then the other thing that's actually getting like a ton of traction lately, and it's getting a lot of buzz, is the Oakland minor league soccer team, or the amateur
the
league,
USL
so the Oakland
team,
Roots,
the Oakland
USL,
Roots.
USL team.
Yeah, that's
the
ours.
So
is
that,
the USL.
They also have a minor league or league below women's soccer team called the Oakland Soul. Mm-hmm. So it's like the same owner, like they have the same symbol and everything like that. And there are a lot of rumors that the Soul might move up to the NWSL main league because they have the NWSL announced this year that they were going to do a Bay Area soccer team as well. So okay. there's a lot of rumors that that's going to be the Soul. But like Julio said, those two teams, like the town has totally rallied around because I think they saw the writing on the wall a year ago.
Yeah.
And like the Oakland 68s, which is an organization that they're basically the drummers out in right field for.
Okay.
And they've kind of adopted that team also as their team, and they do events where they go to games or they watch games on like TVs at like they'll go to like a brewery and they'll have the game on, so you can go do like a watch party there. So they've really like embraced those two like franchises. Now, will the Oakland Roots be an MLS team? That's tough to say because we do already have an MLS team in the Bay Area. There's a lot of other markets that MLS does need to hit, so I don't know.
Who is owned by who, Chris Madrigal?
The San Jose Earthquakes are owned by John Fisher, which is
So yeah, that would be
interesting coincidence. Yeah.
And it's funny because his whole thing was he wanted to get a new stadium in San Jose. And he was already not like investing into the team. Eventually they did get a stadium built. And guess what happened? He didn't invest in the team.
Yeah, he hasn't put any money on the field for that team either.
Jeez. Wow, this guy sucks. I don't man.
Yeah, he's pretty
owners, awful. Man.
Well, I mean, I we're rooting for you guys. I hope that baseball can stay in the East Bay in some capacity. I hope it works out and this blows up on that guy. But if it doesn't, you know, you're welcome to join the fan base down here. We really like Bob Melvin. He's been a blast what I love about
we told you he was gonna be great.
I mean, I'm not concerned about our manager at all. Part of it for me anymore. And I like his even keel attitude. He doesn't get too high. He doesn't get too low. And
I mean, look what he's done with the clubhouse with you guys. Like your clubhouse was a mess 2 years ago. Like Manny Machado and Tatis were fighting in the fucking dugout. And last year watching those guys in the playoffs, like with all their stupid little jokes, when Yu Darvish was like in line to like slap hand, and they're all the pitchers behind him were like copying everything he did. Like that's what he does. He builds a clubhouse culture where it's like those guys just like love each other and love spending time, and they just like enjoy playing the game.
So we all agree the A's fans cannot be Giants fans. That's off the table. We're not. That's
absolutely not.
Get
out
of here. Yeah. Don't fuck you yet.
Julio said that on the Twitter spaces that night when the announcements came, and like it was like unanimous, like yes.
There's no like it.
We're
like nothing
about, 300 people on Twitter spaces. And
Giants fans. Like, Giants fans are the problem, actually. Yeah. Dodgers fans, I mean, they don't know better, but Giants fans are awful.
They were raised different. You know? I mean, it's just hard streets.
But I mean, I'm concerned. I think Chris, you were contemplating the becoming a Dodgers fan. I mean, what happens when they show the 88 World Series and they show the Kirk Gibson home run? What do you do?
We weren't alive. I wasn't around.
I was at a wedding in Oakland when that happened.
And oh, really? Jesus.
Yeah, I was like
that's 70. Some of my youngest burned in memories for sure.
Yeah, that's
they
like
already the show that at every Dodger game I go to. And I'm whatever. Like, cool story, bro.
Look,
like,
we catch random strays all the time. We see the Jeremy Giambi not slide. I'm like watching MLB TV, and then they'll be like, here's a commercial break. Here's Jeremy Giambi not sliding at home, and Derek Jeter, and a ridiculous cutoff point for some reason, you know?
Hey, you know, just if it helps, Dave Stewart was our pitching coach for a while.
That's right.
He's my favorite Oakland A's pitcher, probably.
For me, I'm deciding. I'm taking this year to decide. I'm trying to watch games and just see who I get a feel for. Because the writing's on the wall. I want to be ready. Because the second I'll be an A's fan until as long as they're in Oakland. But the moment they leave, the moment they like let's say it's two, like they announce it this year, but 2 years from now they move. It's like, okay, cool. I'll be an A's fan next year, and then I'm switching. So I'm trying to decide between the Padres and the Dodgers. And like I said on my podcast, the Dodgers I'm leaning towards because I like going to games. It's so easy to go to Dodger Stadium and go to a game. I like going to Dodger Stadium. It's a fun time, but you can't watch them. And it's not because they're like unwatchable by like they play. You literally like in LA, you just can't watch them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You have to have Spectrum cable in order to watch them. And I don't. I have YouTube TV. So I can't, and they're not on MLB TV because we get blacked out. You just can't watch the game. So it's just like it's hard for me to do that. Whereas like the Padres, I had them on today. I was watching the Padres like while I was working. Like it's just like it's so easy to watch it. And we're not in your guys' market for MLB TV. So I already have that subscription, so I can just keep watching it. I don't have to like get cable, but it's just going to games is like it's just a, it's a bit of a trek, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's not that bad. 3 hours, you know, if I take the Amtrak, it's like 3.5, but still, it's just like, it's not ideal. You know what I mean?
Well, how many Dodgers podcasts have asked you guys to be on?
It's true.
Strike one.
There you go.
Because they don't give a shit about anybody but themselves.
I do love San Diego. Pacific Beach is one of my favorite places.
Oh, Pacific Beach. Yeah.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah. And you right around the corner from Los Cuatro Milpas. I'm like,
oh, yeah. You done it? Yeah, that's great.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the last Padre game I went to was last summer. And when I told my girlfriend, like, hey, because she's San Diego native, I'm like, hey, I'm going to go to the Padres game. We're going to go to Los Cuatro Milpas. She's like, you need to bring home 5 bags of tortillas. Yeah. So I'm walking around the stadium, lugging bags of flour tortillas, and security is looking at me. We're like, look, my girlfriend is a San Diego native. I'm hooking her up. Don't worry about it. Wow. But I can listen to like Don Orsillo talk about paint drying.
Yeah.
Like it's one of the absolute best just listening to.
I think for the me, it's going to depend on the playoff run. Like who goes, if the Dodgers are one and out again, it's just like, this is going to be my life again. I don't know if I want to do this.
The one option when you lose a team in a sport is just lean into gambling and not root for anybody. I already do that though. That's what I did with like, I don't have an NFL team. It's just not part of my life anymore. But
yeah.
I don't know.
The one thing I can say though, for all the Padre fans who will be listening to you guys, whatever, you know, any way you can try to spread the word of just how horrible John Fisher is and how he's not only ruining Oakland baseball, but he's ruining baseball in general, because if other owners are seeing he's able to get away with this and get a stadium somewhere, despite his real just buffoonery at this point, then what makes you think your team will not be next? What makes you think the Cincinnati Reds, even though they have a nice stadium, can be like, well, it's getting up there, it's 20 years old or something. What makes you think, you know, the Colorado Rockies, who are like, well, we've been pretty crappy for so long and our stadium's 30 years old. What makes you think your team's not next if they see this guy get away with it? So hashtag Fisher out as much as you can, get the word out. I think he's in the middle of a losing battle. Chris can vouch for me or not. I've been had a couple tequila sodas, so it might be that too. But
we'll just tell him he's like Dean. He's like Dean.
Yeah, well, I mean, we can relate so close to this.
Exactly. You got it. You guys get it.
They get it. They know. They know the type.
And now Dean is filling the ultimate faith, where in reality, he's the fourth football team in LA. Like, think about it. I think it's like right.
That's true.
It's a Raider. It's Raiders first.
Yep.
And then maybe the Rams, but then Cowboys, and then Chargers.
USC?
Like
USC.
Yeah, USC. UCLA.
UCLA.
I think UCLA is above the Chargers for sure.
Yeah, like nobody's a Chargers fan out here. It's sad.
Both of those football franchises are even above the Rams, dude. Like this town does not care.
I know. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Rams won a Super Bowl, and it's still hard to find Rams fans consistently.
Well, man, this is a fascinating story, guys. And I just, you know, keep up the fight. I hope you guys keep podcasting. And for our listeners, if as this story progresses, I definitely encourage you to check out the Town Tailgate podcast. Are you guys under a different name? It's like OBL.
So yeah, we joined a podcast network. So our feed is now it's the same feed, but it's now the Oakland Baseball Podcast. So search that. And then if you look at episodes, we share it with another.
That's what I thought.
Like podcasts. They're called the Oaktown Boys, but it'll be the name of the episode, and then it'll be a dash, and then it'll be Town Tailgate. So that's how you know it's us, Town Tailgate. It's our episode. Yeah.
Cool. Well, we're rooting for you guys. I hope it all works out, and you're welcome down here to join the Padres and Seals fan base.
Kidding aside, the joke I made at the very beginning, thank you guys for having us on. We do love talking to you guys.
Absolutely. Always a blast. We'll have to run into each other at a Seals game at some
Seals
point.
Game. Seals Twitter.
Love it. Yes.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Kept Faith podcast. You can check us out at Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and keptfaith.com. Travis will be back soon. I was thinking, I don't know, talk to maybe somebody about minor league prospects or something. David J, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, let's do it.
We're just talking about who we're going to book before we do it. Now. That's the move.
I like it. Are you ready for this weekend, Nick? This is our first taste of
the battle for Chris's
the battle heart. Since that's we beat them to go. Yeah.
Are they in town or are they in LA?
In LA, right? Isn't it?
No, this is in
town. Is it here? Okay.
It is here.
I'll say, if it was in LA, maybe I'd go to a game and see if I can make my choice that way.
Next weekend, you can go in LA. It's kind of like a great week for Padres Dodgers where we get them here and then we go there next weekend. So,
nice.
Yeah.
It's exciting. Well, it's a tight NL West race. So we'll make our statement this weekend.
Always is, though.
All right, guys. Keep the faith and we'll talk to you next time. Bye. Catch it!